This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Yesterday, the Soviet Union's highest legislature voted itself out of existence and dissolved the Soviet Union as we know it. A newly created state council has granted independence to the Baltics. My guest, Walter Clemens Jr., says the Baltic independence movement has provided the model of a nonviolent resistance movement, a model that can be emulated inside and outside the Soviet Union. Clemens is the author of the new book, Baltic Independence and Russian Empire. He's a professor of political science at Boston University and is affiliated with the Harvard Center for Science and International Affairs. I spoke to him earlier today and asked what his emotional reaction is to the Baltics' new independence.
That is a great moment for them and in some way for me. My most intense emotional involvement happened about a year ago in Estonia, when I saw the Congress of the Estonian people gather for the first time and assert the country's sovereignty and its right to do its own thing. I was there in a conference hall where people were, everyone around me was weeping and singing and so on. And it was a very intense moment.
You plan to nominate the Baltics for a Nobel Peace Prize. What will your recommendation say, do you think?
Well, the basic argument is that their model of nonviolent resistance is one that has worked for them and I think shows a road that other peoples could follow, should follow. The way that they went about it was partly using the slogan of perestroika and glasnost. They used glasnost to expose some of the Soviet brutality of the past, perestroika to organize popular fronts and other social organizations that plugged for national self-determination. They responded to Soviet violence with nonviolence. They refused to be provoked. When I was in Estonia about a year ago, I was with people who were associated with the Popular Front there. They made a point not to get caught up in the very large assemblies of Russian settlers there that were organized by large Soviet factories in Estonia because they were afraid there might be some kind of a provocation and bloodshed that could be used against them.
You've described the Baltic independence movement as the singing revolution. Is that your phrase or is that something that they've called themselves?
It's one that they have used to describe their own movement. And it turns out that over 100 years ago, the Balts began to organize song festivals in local parish churches. And once railroads began to cross across the Baltic and link these different parish churches, they came together to hold festivals, competitions, in which people would sing these old songs, went back hundreds, maybe a thousand years, some of them. And from that, they began to feel themselves a people. And there's a tremendous moral force when people come together and sing. We see some of that in festivals in this country, but the scale of the song fests in the Baltic is out of all proportion to anything that I've ever heard of in the States. They sometimes get almost 500,000 people in one place for days singing, you know, asserting that we are a group, we have a right to live our own life, and so on. And it turns out that this has helped them to withstand tanks and armed force of the Soviet Union.
What are the songs that would be sung at the Songfest?
Well, these are mostly older folk songs. Up in the Soviet period, let's say from 1945 until recent years, they were usually required to insert a number of songs glorifying Soviet unity. Last year in Estonia was the first time that they were able to have a song festival in which only Estonian songs were used.
What are some of your greatest hopes for the Baltics now that they're independent?
One hope is for the quality of their own lives. They know that in the late 1930s, their living standards were somewhat similar to those in Finland. Now, those of them who go to Finland as guest workers realize that Finnish living standards and, in general, living standards throughout Scandinavia are vastly superior to theirs. They feel that they've been given an unfair albatross by the Soviet system, and that's being removed. Of course, it's going to be very hard for them to reintegrate with the world economy. The quality of what they produce is simply not up to Western standards. Chernobyl and other things have maybe even contaminated some of the food that they may wish to export. So there are a lot of problems ahead for them, but I basically believe that they have the intelligence and the habits of industry and thrift that will help them to radically improve their living standards in the next 5 or 10 years.
But I also hope
that they will become a bridge between East and West, and that whatever good the West does have to offer may be funneled even into Russia and the Ukraine and other parts of the USSR through the Baltic.
On this day when many people are celebrating Baltic independence, there's also some cause for concern. And I'm thinking about the exonerations that Lithuania has been issuing to Nazi war criminals who were condemned by Soviet courts. And apparently Lithuania has already issued about 1,000 certificates of rehabilitation. And, the United States told Lithuania that it expected Lithuania to comply with its own law by excluding war criminals from its program of exoneration. I'm wondering if you could interpret for us what's happening there, why Lithuania has been issuing these exonerations. And if you share the concern of so many people in the United States, particularly Jewish people in the United States, that they're exonerating people who were Nazi sympathizers.
And who participated,
I mean, who worked with the Nazis in killing Jews.
Well, the reports on this are so far so spotty that I'm afraid to pass any judgment on it. But I think we have to understand that the Balts are very concerned that thousands and thousands of their population disappeared during the 1940s and even later than that, when many of them were shipped off to Siberia. Most of those who were condemned by Soviet courts were condemned for essentially doing nothing or perhaps cooperating with Germans against the Soviet Union. I suspect that a very small number of them were involved in anti-Semitic activities. Now, the Lithuanians may have rushed, I think that they have rushed, to a mass exoneration of those people who were condemned by Soviet courts. But if you know how Soviet courts operate, and if you have seen, as I have, the kind of slips that were sent to families in the 1950s saying, your relative, your father, whatever, was wrongly condemned by a Soviet military tribunal and is rehabilitated posthumously, you begin to sympathize with the people in the Baltics who feel that large numbers of them were wrongly accused. Also, many of them lost their property because of these arrests and condemnations by Soviet courts. So I hope that the Lithuanians make clear that they are not going to exonerate Nazi collaborators, and particularly those who were involved in killing Jews. I suspect that with some period of time that clarification will take place.
Do you see this process of exoneration as being a sign that Lithuania might condone anti-Semitism?
Well, there's certainly a lot of worry among Jews there, among Poles there, among Russians there, and some other minorities, that once the Lithuanians are really in charge, that these other minorities will be persecuted in some way. There is at least one sign going completely in the opposite direction, and that is that the Lithuanian has recently signed an agreement with Russia, making it very easy for Russian citizens to become citizens of Lithuania. Earlier, there was a requirement that they had to learn Lithuanian rather quickly, and that they had to live in Lithuania for a certain time period. Those limits have recently been relaxed, I would say, in a almost over-generous way, because I think they're inviting perhaps a flood of Russian immigrants into their own country now.
Are you concerned about ethnic hostilities between Lithuanians and Russians in Lithuania? Russians are a minority in each of the three republics, but Let's see, there's a 30% Russian population in two of the three republics. I mean, it's pretty large.
Well, in Lithuania, the number of non-Lithuanians is about 20% of the total. And in recent years, Russians were certainly the target of a lot of defamatory remarks and some discrimination. But I think that now that Lithuania feels free, they can in some way relax and take it easy when before they were uptight. And of course, they had reason to be uptight. Some, not all, but some of those Russians were something like a fifth column working from within. Many of them had privileges and perks that the Lithuanians wanted for themselves. One way to think about these Russians is to imagine the way Algerians felt about Frenchmen in the years before Algerian independence. Once Algeria was independent, then they could look at Frenchmen in a somewhat more relaxed way.
But in the meantime, the Russians have been perceived as the oppressor, as the representatives of the Soviet government.
Yes. In Estonia, in Tallinn, the capital, something like half of the population, maybe more in the capital, is Russian. And many of the street signs have been in Russian. There was a Yuri Gagarin Boulevard, and all kinds of signs of Russian domination. And so if you were a proud people, aware that you had a historic past that goes back 1,000, 2,000 years, then all of these signs in the memory of relatives who have been sent off to Siberia and so on, that's all very, very painful.
If you're just joining us, my guest is historian Walter Clemens, Jr. He's the author of the new book, Baltic Independence and Russian Empire. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Walter Clemens, professor of political science at Boston University. The Baltics became part of the Soviet Empire back in the 1700s, and the only time that they were really independent was in the period between the two world wars. If we look at that period, what kind of governments did they have in the time that they were independent? How did they handle the independence?
Well, in the first place, they had very little experience with self-government. And during that entire period, they were harassed from the one side by the Soviet Union, which had its revolutionary outbursts even in the early 1920s and during most of the 1930s. On the other side, there was Germany shifting toward fascism from the early 1930s. So they were squeezed between two superpowers of that period, both of them totalitarian dictatorships. Now, in addition to that, they had to cope with the depression, world depression, economic depression. And during that period, in the 1930s, the Baltic republics developed very authoritarian regimes. And that's the way they were on the eve of the Soviet takeover. So they have very little history of self-government. Now, on top of that, we have the Soviet model that there's one truth, one way to do things. And that kind of model, I think, is still in the minds of many of the people today, even those who are liberal reformers. They are very intolerant of other viewpoints. I pointed out to them that the New York Times has an op-ed page in which they value having opposed opinions. And I said the Soviet newspaper, Literatura Gazeta, is now developing something like that clash of opinions. And some of the Balts I spoke to said, well, we can't afford that kind of clash of opinion. Now, this was a year, two, 3 years ago, before their independence. And it remains to be seen whether, now that they are independent, they will be able to really tolerate a diversity of viewpoint.
Now that the Baltics are independent, how much do you think they'll be working together? I'm wondering what some of the divisions are among the Baltic states.
First of all, they have different languages. Lithuanian and Latvian are fairly close to each other, but Estonian is closer to Finnish. During the 1920s and 30s, they made some attempt at working together, but they didn't pull it off very well. In the last two or three years, however, the popular fronts in each country, in each of the Baltic republics, have come together and formed a Baltic Council. And that Baltic Council meets every month now. Either the prime ministers or another top minister of each of the republics meets. And their efforts at working together have gone rather smoothly in the last few years. You've probably noticed that the foreign ministers were traveling around in Europe and other places working out the details of recognition for the Baltic republics. I would expect that they would work out some kind of a trade deal that would permit free passage of goods across their frontiers. They are even beginning to work out that kind of arrangement with Russia. There are good precedents for this. The peace treaties between Russia and the Baltic republics in 1920 provided for liberalized trade regimes between Russia and the different Baltic republics. And the Balts are attempting to go back to those early treaties from 1920 as a model of how to do things today.
I'm really kind of interested in how the timing of people's books and records and so on relating to the Baltics and to the Soviet Union is being affected by these really sudden changes. Your book is called Baltic Independence and Russian Empire. It was written, of course, before the Soviet Union recognized Baltic independence. How do you think the timing of this is going to affect your book, and how do you feel about your book having been completed before that final chapter could have been written?
Well, I have thought for the last several years that the Balts would achieve independence very shortly, and I tried to write the book with that expectation in mind, but I also wrote it in a way that I put everything into the past tense, rather than into the present or certainly the future tense. Instead of making a flat prediction, the last chapter analyzes dilemmas that face the Balts, the Russians, and the United States on how to cope with the kinds of problems that result. Basically, if you exploit a people like the Balts have been exploited, you know that pretty soon there's going to be an eruption. And so I wrote the book with that eruption in mind.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay, thank you very much.
Walter Clemens is a professor of political science at Boston University and author of the new book, Baltic Independence and Soviet Empire.